Welcome to Signals, the podcast where we step back from the hype to look at what's shaping technology. In each episode, we talk with industry experts to surface trends, question assumptions, and unpack why things work the way they do today. We're focused not just on what's new, but on the decisions and developments that got us here and what to expect down the road. I'm your host, Michael Dowden, and here with me today is Mark Boyd. Director of at Platformable. Mark, thank you so much for being with me today.
Thanks for the invite, Michael. Great to be here.
So you're doing a lot of work with DevOps and more recently with platform engineering. How would you define platform engineering today in terms of kind of what that is shaping up to look like?
Okay, so there's two schools of thought, and I can be a little bit of a fence sitter and sit on both of them, actually. So so when we look at, and this definition comes from Camille Fournier, who wrote Platform Engineering, an O'Reilly book, really awesome, highly recommended. So she talks about platform engineering being taking a product approach to your platform that's driving all of your internal capabilities around delivering digital to internal stakeholders and then externally as part of your business. So that's the one definition. And another one of the people I totally respect in this space, James Higginbotham, also sort of talks about that kind of boundaried idea around platform engineering, because if you go broader, which I'm tempted to do, then everything becomes platform engineering. So there's a little bit of that as well. But so my definition these days, the more and more I think about it, I see platform engineering as basically governance. Like it is, like platform engineering is how you manage your tech in a way that's going to be consistent, generate value, and is secure, compliant, risk-free, but can also scale, you know? So all of those things, governance is the heart of it. But that's where I think with James and Camille, they would say, maybe I'm going too broad because then everything becomes platform. But maybe it does.
It makes sense, though, to frame it in terms of governance, I think. I really like that kind of framing of the space. So what is it about some of the recent developments in platform engineering that kind of get you excited?
Yeah. Look, so we'll get to AI in a bit. I'm sure you've probably got a specific question about AI, so I don't want to preempt you on that one. So for me, one of my core things in life is to support the development of open digital ecosystems, because that means that everyone can participate and co-create their own value. You know, it's not so much a winner takes all sort of approach, it's a winner shares all. And we can all be winners in that model. You know, if we're actually striving to provide a service to our consumers, we don't need to be the multi-million. As soon as you get to that level, you're just blanding out all of your services to be something that is generic and doesn't quite fit anyone's needs. And then we get into all of this problem with billionaires and what they think, you know. It's all going back.
Right.
Platform engineering is the solution to our revolution. But what I get excited about, though, is when there is a level playing field in which everyone can participate. And platform engineering sort of enables that internally in an organization. It means that even the newest developers who've come on board can be able to start contributing. Those who maybe don't have technical skills are able to sort of work with those with the technical skills to be able to deliver products for consumers or for citizens or whatever, or whoever's the organizational market, you know. So I'm excited about like where we can that's what really excites me about platform engineering. And because it also if it works well, it brings in the business and the technical side. We constantly say that's what we're trying to do, and then we build a technical solution. And millions of people go, I don't know what that is. They walk away. Like we did that with observability just recently. You know, it was probably the last round. You know, it was like, yes, because observability is going to show business impact. And then we show like error rates and business is like, I'm going to go over here.
Totally true. So in your estimation, is platform engineering primarily focused in at the internal users, or is there also an external component to external facing component to what you're doing?
Yeah, that's I like primarily thinking of it as internal. So you're thinking about it in terms of your internal platform for the all of everyone in your organization that's working with it. However, then once you've got that base, then it also becomes your foundation for an ecosystem play, which is where you're then externalizing some of those digital assets. And the reason why I separate it is because I do think they require different sort of sets of skills. When you're thinking about an ecosystem, you are thinking more about interoperability as well and data sharing, guardrails and all that. You need those internally as well, but there's different types of strategies that you would apply internally to get interoperability across lines of business or data sharing agreements across lines of business.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So you touched on this a little bit, but what are some of the day-to-day changes in the lives of developers and consumers of your internal platforms as a result of some of the new things you're doing, such as, for example, AI?
Okay. Well, so one thing I think before that, one of the basics I think with platform engineering is that there should be a real, you shouldn't have any backs of the envelope, you shouldn't have any envelopes lying around that you can write data models on the back of.
Okay, that's fair.
I need one. Like, give me a piece of paper and I'll write it down. And then I'll code it. Like, so, you know, like one of the things I want with, or, you know, I think is important with platform engineering is anytime you go to start something new, you should, instead of starting it new, you should be thinking, have we got a process for this? Have we got a data model for this? Have we got a environment set of variables for this? Right. Have we got the scaffolding for this? You know, so anything that you realize is taking you out of your flow, you should be able to find in your library. And if it's not immediately available in your library, then it's got to be like, well, why, you know, let's, how do we build this to standards and all of that? So it also makes that whole, you know, I know documentation, everyone's like, ugh, you know, like I'll get to it, I'll do it later.
Right? Developers are so great at that.
I was working with one organization and they had people, they had developers who preferred to leave the organization rather than understand the code base that someone else had developed. Because
that's
like
epic.
There was no commenting or anything in it. So they were like, I'm going to apply for a new job.
Wow.
So yeah, that's the impact it can have. So then, so I think AI though can help with some of this. You know, I'm a big believer in you need technical writers, you know, so I do believe that, so that you need to have people who are skilled at being able to communicate messaging. But there's a lot of tedious writing that doesn't need that technical writer to be involved with, you know, and some of that is, you know, like things like sometimes in API, in the API world, in a API specification, you might have examples, you know, in a or error messaging and that kind of stuff. You could probably, you can offload to an AI, you know, and have them do the the first run of the all of the those sorts of things. So, you know, I think there's a role for AI in speeding up some of those platform engineering tasks that were never fun and that were were the tedious but needed to be done, you know, sort of tasks.
So would you say that platform engineering is empowering AI, or that AI is empowering platform engineering?
I think it goes both directions. Okay. So I think, so you need, if you want to make, if you want to get value out of AI, you need platform engineering to be at a high, you need your platform engineering to be this high before it can ride the AI roller coaster.
Good analogy.
So you need the platform engineering to be able to have the standardization. Otherwise, the AI is going to go off the rails very quickly as far as like misunderstanding or misinterpreting, all of those sorts of things. But then when you with that though, you can also then use AI tools, like I was saying, to do some of those tedious and boring tasks within platform engineering. Try, what, but you're going to need, so this is where the context and the intent becomes really huge. So again, this is where the technical writers will be really important. You need to be, when you're moving your platform engineering to be AI enabled, you really need to have all of those descriptions describing the use cases and describing the intent of the different components of your platform. So once you've got that, because that's what the AI needs to understand that intent in order to be able to make decisions. So having really clear descriptions of that intent, of that context is really huge. That's why I'm thinking, let's call, some of this platform engineering, we can also call it context first, governance, sort of thing. So, or a context first framework for platform engineering, so that's where I think that's going to come in.
So how would you I feel like a lot of people are coming in from DevOps and looking at platform engineering, and how would you define what's changed? Not just yes, it's you've defined the scope as kind of in governance. We know that it's enabling AI and that it's empowered by AI. Now, what is the big delta from doing DevOps to going into platform engineering? How would somebody kind of understand that shift?
Yeah, okay. I think it gets, this is where the business and the technical comes back into it. So I think then, so when you think about it, platform engineering is really, it's going to be the operational fabric for a digital business internally, to operate. So then in that case, it's sort of, you need to sort of come back to thinking about what are we trying to do? Like, what's our organizational mission? What is our business plan for this year? And so the DevOps entering into it could do a really good starting point of understanding what all of the lines of business, how the organization is structured. Remember, we've got to keep coming back to Conway's law here as well. So the app, the software that we develop will only ever be a reflection of the organizational structure. So if you're looking at your platforms and all of the components with it, it does help you to understand your organizational structure and how decisions are made and what level of autonomy lines of business have, all of that. So looking at that, understanding what the, being able to, because you're a little bit of an outsider from DevOps, you're going to be able to look at all of the different KPIs for the business and maybe identify some of those commonalities across different lines of business. So even if that's, some of that might be similar KPIs, and if they're similar KPIs, then that's about like, okay, we're going to need dashboards that is drawing that data from our APIs, from our internal applications, and so on. And then that gets me onto the internal applications. We're seeing already in a number of organizations that those internal applications are being deprecated in favor of greater use of APIs so that the AI can then help spin up a enterprise application that's needed for a specific function using the APIs and then gets rid of the enterprise application afterwards. So there's not that legacy of having to manage these internal applications as products so much as well. So that will be another area I think DevOps would be, if they're jumping into platform engineering, have a look at some of the stuff around that sort of thing. So I think it's context engineering or, context definitions, the shift from stable stateful enterprise applications to something that's more spun up and in as needed, and then understanding how platform is actually the operational fabric for the business goals.
That makes a lot of sense. So you touched on the KPIs. Is there a specific set of metrics or ways you are measuring and demonstrating the impact that platform engineering has on an organization?
That's a really good one. So I'm trying to develop that at the moment. So I think so my thinking on this, it's let me describe some of my thinking about on this. So some of it I think you can make a direct calculation. So a simple one I give is uptime. And so if you know your uptime or your performance is losing 500 milliseconds per API call every hour or something like that on average, you can translate that into a dollar metric. So it's easier for e-commerce, but you can do that for anyone really. And like that every 500 milliseconds that a customer is delayed from spending the shopping at the checkout, they're going to abandon their cart. So you can get an average, and then you can sort of figure out, okay, for every 500 milliseconds for us, it's $1,000 lost each month. You can sort of do some of the, and people can say that seems, where is your assumptions? But you can show your assumptions, and then they can be like, well, no, actually, that was during Black Friday month, so it's so a third of that, you're like, okay, well, it's not that big a deal. But yeah, so you can sort of do some of those things. And same a little bit with churn rate. What I've done with churn rate recently is look at, so when the and so sorry, these are some of the external ones that I've realized. So churn rate though, but you're looking at partner onboarding. And if your onboarding is slowing down those partnerships because they're using your internal or your partner APIs or other digital tools that are part of your partner onboarding, then that's you can sort of classify those external partners perhaps into three tiers, your enterprise, your scale-ups, and your hobbyists. And then maybe looking at last year's data around how much they were spending in their first or how much they were bringing in their first year. And then you can say again, if we're churning this number or they're not completing their onboarding, we know that we're losing this sort of amount. For internal, it's really about dev time times the dev pay rate times number of projects for whenever there's not reuse. So if you're seeing that data models internally aren't being reused, and suddenly last month you had seven data models for user accounts, and this month you've got eight. Then someone's created a new user account data model rather than used one of your existing ones. So, and then you can look in the Jira tickets and see that took them 4 days, and so that was two people, 4 days times whatever the day rate for your developer is, and that's how much you've spent additional for this project that you didn't need to spend. So that you can sort of work out some of those sorts of metrics from a business point of view.
That makes a lot of sense. I don't think it's wrong to look at the external facing metrics either, though. I mean, as you've mentioned, kind of building into that kind of ecosystem engineering. And as a small business owner that works with a lot of startups, I'm always super in, like, I spent a lot of my life very tightly connected between the tech space and the business space. So that overlap in metrics is pretty fascinating to me, honestly.
Absolutely. Look, and the good thing for the if you're DevOps and you're or platform engineering and you're in a role and you want budget to be able to do something like standardize a bit more or spend some more money on your internal developer portal or do a round of training across some teams or whatever, then being able to show the business metrics of what's worked within your platform engineering so far is how you make the business case for saying, look, if we're creating this sort of win revenue-wise, imagine if we could extend, if we could scale that wider, we're looking at 3x or whatever. So yeah.
So I'm going to ask you kind of one of the questions that I'm super passionate about, and that is, I look at the process of releasing software, which is kind of this internal function when you have development teams, as a UX exercise, right? Because every time you release software, you are impacting your users in some way. So how does platform engineering help me as a product owner for example, choose how and when I release my software in a way that minimizes any negative repercussions on my users.
Yeah, that's really great. I think some of the, great question. I think some of that comes back to, so there's elements of platform engineering we all kind of a little bit forget, you know, like, so we're into the internal developer portal and we're into, you know, listing everything there, or then, you know, maybe adopting standards and having linters and all of these great things that are part of it. But we forget some of the basics, like that org structure around the who's the decision makers, what's on their agenda, and also the calendar of releases. You know, and so what we're seeing more and more now is when you're trying to do platform engineering work or take another step forward with how you're doing things, people are like, great, I love the idea, we can't right now. I've got four other major projects happening. I've got an AI proof of concept I've got to get up and going. So I can't do all of this. So I think I think when you're doing that release schedule, knowing what those other pressures are, and you then have to come back to being ready to explain how this release is going to help them with those other tasks as well. If you've done some, if your feature is something about enabling a better search functionality for your internal developer portal so people can surface the data models, then being able to explain that, or even if you're making a video of showing how to use that feature, you're talking about one of those major projects that everyone's working on, you know, and showing how they, so I think it comes back to, you know, again, it's that sort of context, you know, it's context first again, you know, even with humans.
So we've talked around this a little bit, but in light of what you've just said, and you've talked a lot about kind of some of the different shareholders involvement, who is platform engineering for ultimately? Like, who are the people that should be involved in it, but also who are the consumers of it primarily?
Yeah, okay. So that's a really tricky one, isn't it? I mean, I think partly the consumers, if you, on one level, the consumers are the developers across the organization because, you know, everyone wants to tie platform engineering to developer productivity. You know, so, and then it's about keeping them, keeping your developers in flow and all of that sort of thing. Yeah. Now, though, with AI and vibe coding or whatever, then who is the developer in the organization isn't as clear either, you know, sort of thing. So you've got marketing trying to build up prototypes and release stuff and all of that. And you're like, hang on, you haven't used any of our standards. Yeah.
Shadow IT.
Exactly. So, you know, like, so I think the audience does go wider than just that. But I think, you know, to start with, it's developers and supporting developers. But then I think the second one is like the audience is, it's tricky because in if every business is a digital business, it's everyone within the business, you know, and that's what I mean about it moving more to be this operational fabric. So, so I think, but I think, you know, there are those who will be closer in those concentric circles and those that will be further apart, at least at the start. So, you know, I think getting legal compliance and risk involved early is great for platform engineering as well, because they can be a bottleneck quite often for shipping products and features. So if you can embed their sort of review processes and overviews, and there's some great AI compliance checkers. Sekboris has one, for example. But there's tons out there, or a few out there, that are able to do an analysis to ensure that your compliance and regulatory mapping and your security guidelines are all matched. There's stuff like Italy, I think their Italy government's got an open API specification checker, and you can do a sort of linter analysis of your API and see what security best practices against OWASP, you know, come up. So there's those kinds of tools out there that are really cool. But I think embedding that will mean that you want the security, compliance and risk people to be comfortable, because they hear we're exposing the service or we're, you know, we're encouraging reuse of data, and they're like, no! So, like if you can get, you want them to be comfortable. Different type of user. They're not going to be using it directly, but they're going to need to know that their needs are met by the platform engineering components.
Yeah, for sure. So, as you have been working in this space, have you found any specific pitfalls or anti-patterns that have emerged, things that are not working the way you would like?
I think the two biggest ones that I'm seeing at the moment, one is API modernization. So everyone's, and that can go extend to further than just APIs, but where there is this sort of modernization push where we're going to update and upgrade all of our APIs or whatever, given that, and move to that approach because of that enterprise internal application deprecating and moving everything to API, so it's all like just in time building these applications of it. So there is, I've seen a number of organizations who are like 98% of our capabilities, we want them exposed internally via APIs. So APIs have been set up for each department or each line of business on how many of their internal capabilities have been mapped and are now available as an API. So they're moving towards that. So the anti-pattern there is then customers say, hey, I want, and everyone's like, shut up. We're building APIs. And the customer's like, I'm trying to use your API. They're like, no. So the KPI is like percent of your internal functionalities that are APIs. They're not they're, so they're like, you have to wait till next year or 2027, Q4 before we get to that. So that I think that's kind of like an anti-pattern. And then the
That
other
makes
one I've
sense.
seen, I'm hoping it's going to be less so this year, was a big one last year, and that is like, we're in on AI, let's build something with AI, and then they end up building a chatbot that no one wants.
Yes,
They're
yes.
customer facing. Like, why would you
Right.
do that? Why wouldn't you go to the platform engineering team and say, give me the 10 most tedious things that you hate doing, and let's build AI to do those things so you can get
Sure.
on with the good work, And so I think there is now a shift towards this internal and back end use cases, sort of thing. And then you're going to have all of these agents that are doing all those things, and then you need the governance, the platform engineering governance to sit above that and make sure that they're all made in their context, like they're all doing what you expect them to do, and not making stupid decisions because they weren't quite clear on something, So there'll be that level of platform engineering that will come in as well, I think.
Sure. And look, I'm sure there have been a couple really successful chatbot implementations out there, but I think the industry is widely acknowledging that that's not the best application of AI. Where would you say there is good utility and the types of projects you would be focusing on?
Sure. Like in finance, where I've seen it, look, honestly, it is in things like AML and fraud, anti-money laundering and fraud. And that is because you had really strong, deep data sets available already that were really clean and were then able to be used with this sort of analysis, and you can then speed up to the real-time sort of thing with AI there, when you're looking at vast data sets, and a distributed architecture. So I think the early wins would be those kinds of things where, so in some of our AI governance work we do, some of the things we look for is high value and low risk for if you're starting off, so you want stuff that's going to save, 5 hours a week of developer time, or reduce a backlog that sort of, that's been there sort of thing. So those sorts of back end issues, but then try to choose the ones that are lower risk. So they're things that you want to have in place because they're tedious and but they're important, but they're maybe not using so much customer data. Or if they're using customer data, it's already de-anonymized. Oh, it's already anonymized and depersonalized, that sort of thing. So, don't go for some, like even If you look at MasterCard, for example, I like what they've done when they started with actually they've got like a bit of vaporware, I must say though. So when they started with MCP servers and AI and all of that sort of thing for their developers, they said build an MCP server and then you can build your own chatbot on top of that MCP server that's going to ask our documentation questions. So you can get answers to our documentation rather than read it through that. So they were trying to
Nice.
encourage their developer community to sort of start small. I guess it's an okay kind of use case, but it's low risk. It can speed up onboarding for their external developers. So that's a win. Reduces their support calls, sort of thing, very specialized, not really like chatbot, but not like external to customers. So there's those sorts of things, and they're building up that. Now they're saying, okay, we've got an agent payment, which to me is sort of high, much higher risk, sort of thing. So, but when you look at their website, they've got, it's sort of like, yes, we've got an agent payment, get in touch with us, and then it's just like, this is what it could possibly do. So it's not actually, available yet, but it looks, but they're doing their press releases to say it kind of is, but like, so I think that sort of, and that's the sort of approach you need to take internally. Like, is there data sets that you can clean up with some of AI that would save a lot of time, but not be, this is where things like that AI governance, API governance sort of approach of like, let's do the examples in all of the APIs and clean those up because they're not breaking changes for the API. So production's not going to be halted because you've updated your APIs, but for end users and then for future AI consumers, it's adding value, it's sort of fixing all of that. Maybe you're going to get less support calls, less error rates, those sorts of things.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, what are some of the kind of incremental developments over the last few years that have really led to the development of platform engineering as kind of a practice?
Yeah. That's a great question as well. God, you've done your homework. Thanks for putting me on the spot here. Okay, so I think so. One is, so I think from an organizational context point of view, what happened was you had centralized, so everything would go through centralized organizational structure, and the issue was that then the central became the bottleneck because it was making all these decisions. And then with digital, everyone needed it to be much faster. So it went completely, it was like, throw that out, let's do it completely the opposite. And then they went to federated. So then you've got each line of business is autonomous and doing its own thing. And then you've got each line of business has their own cloud provider and their own API gateways and their own data sets and all of that sort of stuff. So suddenly you've got this complexity and duplication, across those things and fragmentation because they're using different interoperability data models and so on. So then it was like, oh, that speeds it up as far as time to market, but then none of our products can talk to each other or none of them, they're or look and feel the same, even. So that's when the whole look and feel thing started as well, I feel like. So there was that. And then out of that came team topologies suggesting that the way forward was the platform and enablement team, which is, I think, where platform engineering has been situated, So it's sort of the best of both worlds. You've got centralized for platform, and then you've got line of business still taking those centralized resources, but doing their own things with it, So you're introducing some consistency and standardization and encouraging a sort of playbook of best practices and some common tooling so it can keep that work sped up at the local level. So there's that. So I feel like that's been a big thing for platform engineering to move forward. Out of that, though, has then become the enablement piece. So in the platform team, there's a sub team called enablement that's sort of like the developer advocates or developer resource support or developer evangelists, but for internal. So they're going around to each line of business and saying, hey, did you know we've got, these common toolings or these style guides or these the internal developer portal and all of that sort of thing. And that's, to me, that's not funded as well as it could be quite often. So they're quite often overloaded or not terribly well resourced. And I think that's because we're not making that business to value comparison. Like if we invest more in this, it's going to help. So I don't think we've got that solved just yet. But then, so then for platform engineering, though, I think that's where, that's where it sort of started to have an impact on each line of business and all of that sort of stuff. So there's that. The other one trend that I would say would be we went to DevOps, which is awesome, and then from DevOps we went to DevSecOps, which is then where we sort of started realizing if you don't bring in security and compliance at the beginning, you can do all the DevOps all you want, and then it sits as in a bottleneck anyway, because security is like, how comes this is the first time I'm hearing of this, sort of thing. Hang on, we need a couple of months to look over this, and so then that DevSecOps, being able to influence there. So I think they're the two major trends I've seen with platform engineering, growth.
Makes perfect sense. So I do a lot of accessibility work on the front end, and I feel like security and accessibility have this in common, and it is that people love to overlook them, get a project almost to completion, and then, hey, can you just make this accessible, or can you just make this secure? No, not now.
It's crazy.
Didn't
I
even
mean,
start.
yeah. I mean, luckily, in Europe, luckily, there is a bit more of a push on the accessibility guidelines and the W3C guidelines for that. You're in US, some of the companies, I've been big on pushing accessibility from the start of a project, and people, there is still a sense of like that it's a cost, rather than a benefit. Like, I don't know how many people you know, but like a lot of people I know put the subtitles up when they're watching Netflix, So like accessibility guidelines help us all,
Absolutely.
regardless of, your specific needs to use digital. But like they're actually performance enhancing features, for us all. So the so yeah, so I mean I think the so yeah, so I think that, that would be great actually. Should be DevAccSecOps. Let's make it happen, Michael.
Right? I love it. So you've really kind of described something that I see a lot in almost any way you slice technology. I see the same concept, and it is this pendulum, right? We do one thing, and then a few years later we do almost the exact opposite, right? And then a few years later we go back to where we were before. And do you think that this space from DevOps to platform engineering is a case where we're seeing centralization, we're getting closer and closer and closer to some like correct state, or are we seeing that like that pendulum is swinging more and more all the time, and we're not necessarily drilling in on what a long-term practice is going
That's tough. So
to look like?
we see it also in the great unbundling and then
Yeah, for
rebundling.
sure.
It's like split it into
Totally.
little bits and then no, actually bring it all back together. We want the one bit. So it's kind of, it's like that as well. I think to me, so the pendulum it does go, goes wide first and then it gets thinner and thinner and it starts to, and once it gets to this sort of level of like just a little bit of a swing, then some a whole new S curve comes in, like we've seen with AI, and then it's like we don't need a pendulum, we need a sand hourglass. So it's sort of flipped again, and so then we go back to that. I think it's it's tricky because I think we need to get better at those at the extremes, as far as we need a way to talk about the extremes a bit better that isn't so tech focused, Because, and I think we've seen that with AI. We've seen that, in with we saw with Web3, where did that go? All of these other things. I mean, DevOps is one of the success stories about a technology evolution. I feel like that one stuck. And Web3 didn't really, and then, but I remember going to one conference at one time, and everyone was like, "Alexa apps are the thing." Throw away everything else. Just do this. This is where the money is, and this is what every this is what the future will look like. So, and then, like, so there's some of that. We're too quick with the technology pendulum swinging up, and so we're too on board with that. And I think we need to have, I mean, one good thing I think out of the AI is that there has been those louder voices that have sort of questioned some of this, and we did do this with previous technology movements as well, but I think this time around maybe those voices are a little bit louder. I don't like this whole idea of suggesting that there's the doomsayers and the the true believers sort of thing. I think there is a ground in the middle for, like, okay, it's useful here, not so much there, and we need that kind of stuff to be able to bring down the pendulum. The pendulum can still swing, but maybe not like all the way up on each side, and knock things over as it goes, sort of thing. It
For
sort of
sure.
like needs to be a bit more. So I'm hopeful eventually humans will learn that.
Yes, you would like to think so. Well, and one of the bits of nuance that has been lost, I think, in some of the more recent conversations around AI specifically, and you kind of touched on this, is there's different types of AI, right? Not everything AI is an LLM. You've mentioned, hey, if you have your own data sources, we can train our own models based upon really good data sources and have a completely different outcome than using, I don't know, ChatGPT to try to solve the same problem, right? And there's so many different approaches and techniques and tools. It's its own ecosystem, effectively,
I know
of
everyone keeps talking about, I think, is it DeepMind, the Google one, and they sort of keep talking about, hey, it's, come up with a novel basic science for health, sort of thing. And it's like, yeah, that's not generate that's not generative AI though, that's deep learn, that's, deep algorithms and all of that sort of stuff. And then there's a great paper in Spain, it is available in English, around AI use for agriculture. I'm sorry, the name of the academic who wrote it's escaped me for the minute, but like, and it has like 16 different AI examples that have benefited agriculture and improved food security at scale. And none of them are generative AI. They're all like, they're all algorithm based. The example I gave of the compliance checker, that doesn't use an LLM, because if it used an LLM, it would you wouldn't be sure that the same you get the same result every time. So it's instead it's like built an algorithm on a whole way, and then it uses LLM as a mechanism to describe at the end. So it's using sort
Love
of
it.
the language, natural language processing functions to make it sound like a human, or like a in a more natural conversational tone, but the data and everything is built off the data sets and the the scorecards, and has a decision making tree and all of that sort of stuff. So yeah, so I think there yeah so I think we're gonna I think we need more of those sort of stories of success,
For sure. Yeah, absolutely. So, what is going to come next in this grand pendulum swing? What is the next big change, and what kind of timeline are you seeing in terms of major developments? Are we looking at major developments every couple of weeks, every couple of months, 6, 12 months, like?
Look, so I'm trying to think of the next 5 year span at the moment, actually. Because then I just want to read books after that. So I do think we're in a really crucial crossroads. I think the era of, I would like to think the era of big tech is coming to an end. I feel like we're getting to a point. I mean, in Europe, we see the digital sovereignty debates emerging. I think in the US, we're seeing the geopolitical plays that have come with big tech, and there's some disrupt. I think we need to pull back from that, and that's been seen. And I think we're kind of already seeing it in some social media sort of circles where, like Twitter's dead, it's become the Nazi bar and everything. But so then I think instead what's happened though is you've got the Discords and the Slacks and smaller communities and, WhatsApp groups that are just like, communities there and Telegram or whatever. So people are going more to that. So imagine that on the global scale with, and then also in marketing, ecosystem-led growth is a real growth area for how you do marketing because search engines are broken, so no one's going to find your stuff there. So instead, it's about like who's a natural partner for me, and can we go to market and share our customers together, sort of thing. So I think there's a lot. I think we're going to see a lot more of that. And we're going to move more to those sorts of models, which we're going to need to do also as far as sharing resources better as well in like a sustainable IT way. Because some of the big tech and some of those approaches, they're unsustainable from the energy resource. So we're going to look more at how does community sort of work at this. So I think those ones. So again, we're going to need governance because we're going to need to be able to work better with the people around us and our stakeholders and our ecosystem partners. And so I think we're going to see that sort of grow over the next few years. And I think that will be the, I'm thinking globally, that will be actually a more, I mean, imagine like, it's sort of like the utopian vision will be like farmers market in every community. But imagine that, with, some of the makers hub type visions and all of those sorts of things. I think we can get back to there over the next 5 years. And I'm really hopeful that, this is, I know it's that everyone's using that Gramsci quote at the moment is the old world is dead and the new world hasn't been born and the monsters are here in the between, but I think we can move towards that new world, sort of thing. And I think platform engineering and open digital ecosystems are the way to do that.
No, yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense, and I think that phrase, like kind of presenting it in that way, and also the way you've described it as a governance play, right? Governance can't go away. And so it may change what it looks like on the face, but as long as we have governance-led technical initiatives and platforms, you're going to have something that looks somewhat similar to this, I would imagine.
I mean, and governance at the heart of it, governance is trust, because, trust because you're wanting like you want to know that if you do certain things, you're going to get these results or, you're going to get this, but these benefits, and that I'm able to communicate with you because we're both trusting, the standards and the consistent languages that we're using sort of thing. So it builds all of that. So it's, I think it's going to be crucial. And, now there isn't a lot of trust globally, and I think this is the way back to building that trust.
It's fascinating that you bring that up because literally the previous episode I was talking with Conrad Piercy on from a design standpoint, right? Front end UX. And the exact same topic came up that we are in a situation where we are trying to really build, establish and build and maintain trust with our end users. And I think you're talking about the same thing from a platform engineering standpoint. I think there's something to this, right? It's kind of an
Me too.
important topic
This
everywhere.
is the theme of the year. Let's rebuild trust, sort of thing. So, yeah.
Nice. So what you've talked a little bit about some of the external forces that are happening here. What's happening to anybody that kind of gets left behind or isn't kind of moving forward on adopting more modern approaches to their infrastructure and their governance?
I think there's a role for all of us to play in. I mean, we all have to be It's a tricky line, to be honest, because I do believe that enterprise, when I've looked at the data, those enterprises that do better fund training for their staff, sort of thing, especially in AI and all of that sort of stuff. They make the training available, whether that is buying the training courses, giving people an hour or two for independent learning a week, all of these sorts of things where, carving off that time, bringing people in, encouraging them to do extra studies, giving them the resources they need and the time, all of those sorts of things. Like the organizations that do that go well. The ones that say, you do this in your own time, they flounder and they build the chatbots that don't have any value and all of that sort of stuff, So, I think partly it's that, but then at the same time, I also think we as individuals need to take on our own learning path a lot more, a lot more, and be lifelong learners, sort of thing. It's hard, but I remember the days when everyone was like, I can't learn a new social media network. I'm on MySpace, and that's where I'm going
Sure. How's that working out?
Exactly. So, So, it's just we've got to accept that there is just we need to embrace that curiosity and enjoy that rather than just feel like we can then, that this is what it's going to look like. It's not going to keep looking like that, So I think there is a little bit of that, and that's sort of some pragmatism. So there's that aspect. I think also, though, I think like personally, I've it comes back to the geopolitical thing, which I don't fully understand because, the world is rich enough. Even those at the top could still keep having what they've got at the top and all of that sort of thing. They wouldn't even notice if a little bit more of it was redistributed, So, I don't fully understand. I feel like we're at the end of that path, sort of thing. And we need people to be talking about it. We need to be talking about how, like, why I in the developer circles and the tech circles, I think we put up with it. Like none of us said 15 years, this has all happened in the last 10 to 15 years. None of us said 10 or 15 years ago, hang on a second, they're paying themselves like an outrageous sum of money. We all like went, well, they built it from nothing, in the garage. So, which they didn't, they got massive loans or they had a ton of money in the start, but anyway, we're gonna go with that story. So they've done that, and we didn't say. But now, in the last couple of years, they're like, "You were mean to me, and you pushed me back on me." And it's like, "No, we didn't. We let you do all this tax free, and now we're paying for it." And I think you see in the dev environments, especially, but in tech circles, people like thousands of people, eBay reduced their workforce by like 3,000 after they had a quarterly improvement in profits, And so, that was just like last year. And so, why, like, and we're not pushing back and saying that's just wrong, Like, why isn't it like even Spotify, they let go of some staff, sort of thing. But like they're trying to build up backstage their platform engineering. Why didn't they just retrain all of those Spotify people or some of them to be like even external backstage new business, consultants or whatever, train them up in that so that when you're releasing them, they could go and set up an independent business to help an organization build on backstage, like you could have actually, like so Stripe could do that, with it whenever they lay off people. Like they could, I don't know why we don't collectively put, share some of that responsibility. It's on the people who weren't able to train because they were working like 12-hour days to just keep up with their last job, So, yeah. Sorry to get too political, but I'm not.
No, but I think it's we can't have really deep, hard conversations about technology and not understand how technology has helped shape and influences the overall geopolitical stage globally, right? It is there is interaction here. We are building systems of automation that can be used for good or for evil,
Yeah.
right? And we kind of have a responsibility, but also an awareness of that's what we're able to do.
Yeah, absolutely. That's where that pendulum needs to go from up here and only go so far, sort of thing.
Yeah.
This is where governance can play a part, asking
Absolutely.
those questions about, like, what is the impact here? Pull the thread,
Yeah, exactly. So when you look at kind of your 5-year plan here, what would you say are some external forces that are needed, or more specifically, any technological developments that are needed, you think, to kind of get you there for
Yeah,
5 years?
I think one thing that we've seen over the past year is, like, open source is having a new heyday. Again, partly thanks to AI. Like, AI wasn't able to build fast enough by keeping everything proprietary. So they released a lot of the AI tools providers released it as open source so that they could get all of these additional hands building for free, sort of thing, and they
Yeah, of
could
course.
speed up. So that, like, and but then as a result, I think there's, and the Cloud Native Computing Foundation's done a fantastic job of building out so a whole range of open source tools. There's a big movement globally around digital public infrastructure and moving towards that. There's now that digital sovereignty push as well, to be able to think about where's your data and who owns your data and all of those things. So I think there's all of that sort of stuff. I think that's sort of growing. And so then the idea is to be a bit more involved in looking at some of those, and that it's applying some of those platform engineering principles, like, what's our interoperability, who's in our networks that we're wanting to share it with, how do we measure reusability and the value that's coming, what are the shared data models, all of those sorts of things that help move all of that forward. So I think there's that's that is rising, and then we need the governance to be able to say, okay, this is how we work together, this is how we communicate and make agreements and stick to our agreements in that sort of approach. And so I sort of see it as trains going in two directions. And so we're all building this track for this new direction so that when the train going the other way is heading towards the wall, we can all just jump off and onto this new train going. Going a new way, sort of thing. So I think we sort of have to keep building to sort of and have that hope and talk, be doing things like the inner source, be active in those communities in new ways where, we're sort of like thinking about, okay, where do we want to get to, Because otherwise otherwise it gets really depressing, that's where doom scrolling comes from and all of that,
Yeah, for
So,
sure. Well, Mark, this has been a great conversation. We've touched about a lot of things. We've looked backwards, we looked forwards. What is the number one thing you really want the audience to take away from this discussion?
I think that we can all start by looking at where we can have an impact. So it's sort of like, I know we've gone full range and talked about a whole things and, how, let's save the world and all of that sort of stuff. But, like, for now, like, it's like that old Apollo story where, they ask the janitor, what are you doing? And the janitor says, I'm helping send some people to the moon. Like, everyone was on that same mission. And so I think in platform engineering, we can sort of be, those who are listening have come here for that. But so, I think thinking about, okay, what can I do to make it easier for my colleagues to enjoy coming to work, and not having to stop what they're doing and figure something out because there's no guidance and they're confused or, whatever. Like, maybe I can just sort of start making sure there's those parts in place. Maybe I've got to learn a little bit more about, like, how AI could be used to solve to get rid of this tedious task or whatever. So, I think looking at those rather than getting caught up in this, and I'm guilty of this, like looking up and saying, oh, they weren't taxed at all, and they're a huge organization and I'm struggling with my tax. Whatever. Like, we did, like, those sorts of things won't help us. We've got to sort of think more. So I would sort of get local in order to be a sort of global thinker.
Love it. Awesome. Thank you. How can people reach out or follow you? if I want to stay in
So
touch.
we've got platformable.com is the website, and then there's a contact us page. I'm always happy to, like, on that we've got a Calendly link. So by all means,
Nice.
just jump in and have a chat with me. I'd love that. We're also on Blue Sky, and yeah, and so and Mark at platformable.com.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Mark. It's been a
Really
fantastic
wonderful.
conversation. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much. Great to be here with you, Michael.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Signals. Please be sure to follow DevMio at devm.io or in German at entwickler.de.